The office is quiet at this hour. You are with Marcus in Sunnyvale, California. In the autumn of 1995, in the small building on Mathilda Avenue, where the studio has its offices on the second floor. The building is not much to look at from the outside. Beige stucco, a row of identical windows, a parking lot with faded yellow lines. And the inside is not much more than the outside. There is carpet the color of old mustard. There are drop ceilings with fluorescent panels, some of which flicker if you look at them too long. There is a row of cubicles along the south wall and another row along the north wall. And between them, a narrow corridor that leads to the break room at one end and the fire door at the other. Marcus arrives before anyone else most mornings. He parks his car, a silver Honda Civic, with a dent on the passenger side door that he has been meaning to fix for 2 years, in the lot below. And he takes the stairs because the elevator is slow and tends to make a sound like a question on the way up. He goes through the glass door at the top of the stairs, which has a small hand-lettered sign that says the name of the studio, and he crosses the carpet to his cubicle, which is the third one from the south wall on the left side. And he sits down in his chair. You sit down with him. The chair is a standard office chair, black, with adjustable arms that Marcus has set to a particular height over 2 years of small adjustments. The cushion has softened in the middle, where he sits every day. He settles into it now with the ease of long familiarity, his weight shifting slightly until he finds the position he always finds, the one that is neither comfortable nor uncomfortable, but simply there, simply present, the way the chair is always present when he arrives. The desk is a standard office desk, gray laminate on a steel frame. On it, a monitor, a keyboard, a mouse, a telephone that rarely rings, a coffee mug he does not yet have coffee in, a small fan that he uses in summer and keeps on the desk in autumn without quite putting it away, a stack of printed documentation in a manila folder, and a spiral-bound notebook open to a page covered in small handwriting and small sketch diagrams. He turns on the monitor first. The monitor is a 17-inch CRT, large for the time, larger than most of the other monitors in the office, a point of mild pride that Marcus does not particularly voice. It makes a low sound when it comes on, a kind of magnetic hum that you feel slightly in the back of your teeth if you are close to it. And then the screen brightens from black to a deep charcoal gray, and then to the glow of the operating system's startup screen. The hourglass cursor appears. The cursor spins slowly. You wait with Marcus while the machine wakes up. The startup takes several minutes. This is something everyone in the office has made peace with. The way you make peace with a slow river or a long winter, not happily, not with enthusiasm, but with a settled understanding that this is simply the speed at which things move, and there is no use wishing it otherwise. Marcus does not watch the screen while it loads. He has learned not to. Instead, he looks at the notebook, turning back a few pages to where his notes from yesterday stop. reading over the last few lines in the small, careful handwriting. That is how he records things he needs to remember. The loading finishes. He turns to the keyboard. The keyboard is a mechanical keyboard, beige, like everything else in the office, with keys that make a particular sound, not loud, but present. A soft, firm click each time a key depresses that Marcus has never thought much about, but which you notice now in the quiet of the early morning office. Click, click, click. He types in his password and presses enter, and the system presents him with the file manager, the small gray windows arranged in their familiar configuration. He opens the project directory. The project is a puzzle game. This is the simplest way to describe it. A puzzle game in which the player moves colored blocks across a grid, matching patterns, clearing rows, advancing through levels that increase in gentle steps from very simple to mildly complicated. It is not a new idea. Marcus knows it is not a new idea, but it is their idea, developed over the past 8 months in this office by Marcus and three other people, and it has its own small particularities, its own small pleasures that Marcus has come to feel a kind of affection for. The way you feel affection for things you have spent a long time making. He navigates to the level editor. The level editor is a tool Marcus wrote himself. A gray window with a grid of squares in the center and a panel of colored blocks on the left side and a row of buttons at the top. He opens it and the window fills the screen. The familiar gray and white and the soft colors of the block palette. Red, blue, yellow, green, a lighter purple that he added 3 weeks ago after a long discussion with the rest of the team about whether the palette needed it. They decided it did. He is still not entirely sure. He opens level 17. Level 17 is the level he has been working on. It loads into the grid, a pattern of colored blocks arranged on a 12x8 playing field. The starting configuration from which the player must find a sequence of moves that will clear the board. He has designed it to have three possible solutions, which is more than most of the earlier levels. He has been testing whether all three solutions work correctly, whether the counting logic that tracks valid moves handles all the edge cases. He pulls the notebook closer and reads his notes from yesterday. His handwriting is small but clear. The notes from yesterday cover a quarter of the page. Observations about how the move counter behaves when two blocks clear simultaneously. A small diagram showing the edge case. A question mark beside a line that reads check row clear order. He traces the line with his finger, reading it again. And then he turns back to the screen and navigates to a particular section of the code. You sit quietly with him as he reads the code. The code fills the screen in a monospaced font, white text on a dark background, lines of it scrolling past as he moves down through the file. The lines have a rhythm to them that you notice without understanding. Indentation marking the structure. The repeated patterns of similar constructions. The short words and symbols that Marcus reads the way you read a language you have known long enough that you no longer translate it. Just understand it directly and whole. He finds the section he is looking for. He reads it carefully. He moves his finger along the bottom of the screen, tracing an invisible line under the text. Then he sits back slightly in his chair and looks at the ceiling for a moment. At the drop ceiling tiles, pale and slightly pitted, the fluorescent light in its long housing above his desk, casting its even light without shadows. And he thinks, "You are very quiet." You let him think. The office is still around you both. The hum of the monitor. Very distant sound of cars on the street below. The faint sound of the ventilation system, which is always either too warm or too cold, and today seems to have settled on a temperature that is almost right. A cool but not cold air that comes in at the corner of the ceiling near the break room and moves slowly through the space. The fluorescent light above Marcus's desk makes its own sound, a very soft electrical sound just at the edge of hearing, familiar and constant. Marcus reaches for the keyboard. He types a small change, 5 characters, a number changed from 1 to 0. A condition adjusted. He reads the change again. He reads the line above it and the line below it. He saves the file. The save happens in an instant. The disk drive in the tower beneath his desk making a brief sound like a soft mechanical breath. And then it is done. Now he will compile the code. This is the part that takes time. He moves the mouse to the compile button in the editor and clicks it, and the progress bar appears at the bottom of the screen. A narrow bar in the status area, empty now, beginning its slow fill from left to right. As the machine translates his code into something it can run, the bar moves in small increments, each step taking a few seconds, the indicator light on the tower flickering in a pattern. That means the processor is working. Marcus turns to his coffee mug. It is empty, as he knew it would be. He takes it and stands up from the chair. It rolls back a few inches on its wheels, stopping against the low partition wall of the cubicle, and he walks the corridor to the break room. You walk with him. The break room is a small room. There is a refrigerator that hums somewhat louder than the monitors, a counter with a microwave, and on the counter beside the microwave, the coffee maker, a standard office coffee maker, glass carafe, black plastic housing. a red indicator light that shows it is warming. The previous pot has been warming for some time. When Marcus lifts the carafe, it is half full and very dark. He pours a cup anyway, because the darkness of it is not something he minds. And he lifts it and drinks a first sip, standing at the counter. The coffee is strong and slightly bitter and very hot. He holds the mug with both hands. The break room has a window, a small one. Looking out onto the parking lot below and past it to the street. The street in the morning is quiet. A few cars, a delivery truck, pulling out from a side road. The ordinary slow movement of a morning in this ordinary corner of the valley. The sky is the pale gray blue of early autumn, a thin layer of cloud that diffuses the light without blocking it, everything lit without shadows. Marcus stands at the window and drinks his coffee. He is thinking about the code, you can tell. Or perhaps he is not thinking about anything in particular, just standing in the ordinary comfort of a warm cup and a window and a morning that is beginning in the usual way. His expression is neutral, resting. The particular expression of someone who is at ease in a familiar place, doing a familiar thing. You stand with him and look out the window. The delivery truck has turned the corner. A woman walks past on the sidewalk below, coat on, bag over her shoulder, moving at the pace of someone going somewhere they go every day. Two pigeons land on the edge of the parking lot near the dumpster and walk slowly along the painted line, heads moving in their particular mechanical pigeon way. Marcus finishes the coffee. He refills the mug. He walks back to the cubicle. The compile bar, when he returns, has moved perhaps a third of the way across the screen. This is normal. A full compile of the project takes between 12 and 15 minutes, which he has timed twice without meaning to, simply by noticing when it started and when it finished. He does not time it now. He sets the mug on the desk and opens the notebook to a fresh page. He begins writing notes. This is something he does while waiting for compiles. Not planning exactly. Not solving problems. Just thinking on paper. Writing down whatever comes to him about the current level or the next one or the one after that. His handwriting moves across the page in the same small, careful way. Lines of words, small diagrams. He draws the grid of level 17 in miniature, a 2-centimeter square, and then marks a sequence of moves with numbered arrows. You watch him write. The pen makes a soft sound on the paper. Not quite scratching, something softer than that. The notebook is a standard spiral-bound notebook, college ruled. The cover, dark green, with a small water stain near the bottom right corner. The pages are slightly yellow, which means the notebook is not new. Marcus has been using this particular notebook since early summer, which you can tell from the way some of the earlier pages are slightly bent at the corners, touched and retouched over months of reference. He caps the pen, reads what he wrote, caps it again, and sets it down. The compile bar is a little more than half full now. The door to the office opens. This is Diane, who handles the music and sound design. She comes in every morning between 20 and 30 minutes after Marcus, carrying a large canvas bag and a cup of coffee from the place down the street. She walks past his cubicle, says good morning without stopping, and continues to her own desk at the far end of the row, where she will plug in her headphones and begin whatever she was working on the day before. Good morning, says Marcus. Good morning, she says. And then she's around the corner, and you can hear the sound of her bag being set on her desk, the particular soft thump of it, and then silence again. The office settles back into its morning quiet. The compile bar is 3/4 full. Marcus reads through the section of code again on the screen, reviewing the change he made, reading it in the context of the lines around it, making sure it says what he intended it to say. He does this carefully, his eyes moving slowly across each line, pausing occasionally where the logic is dense. He is a methodical reader of code. This is something he learned early, that the cost of reading carefully once is much lower than the cost of discovering later that you misread something. He reaches the end of the section and looks at the compile bar. It is full. The compilation is complete. There is a small sound from the system, a soft chime indicating success, no errors, and the status bar at the bottom of the editor clears and shows a line of text confirming it. Marcus reads the confirmation. He moves the mouse to the button that will run the game in test mode and clicks it. The screen changes. The game opens. It does not open quickly. There is a loading sequence, a few seconds of black screen, and then the game's title on a simple background, the colors soft, and then the menu. Marcus does not look at the menu. He navigates directly to level 17 from the test entry point, and the level loads. The grid fills the screen. It is, you think, a pleasant thing to look at in a quiet way. The colored blocks on the white grid, the soft palette of reds and blues and yellows and the new purple, arranged in the starting configuration Marcus designed over several sessions last week. The colors are not bright. They are the slightly muted colors of this era of software, constrained by the palette, but arranged with care. Each color distinct, but none of them harsh. Marcus studies the board for a moment. Then he begins to play. He moves blocks by clicking and dragging. The mouse moves smoothly across the desk pad, a gray foam pad with a surface that the mouse has worn slightly smooth in the center from 2 years of use. He drags a blue block 2 spaces to the right. He drags a red block down 1 row. He moves slowly, deliberately, not playing for speed, but testing the logic, watching how the board state changes with each move, comparing it to what the code should be doing. He reaches a configuration he is interested in. He pauses. He looks at the notebook, then back at the screen, then at the notebook again. He moves two more blocks in a specific sequence that he has written in the diagram. The move counter in the corner of the screen increments. A row clears. The blocks dissolve, and the blocks above them fall down into the empty spaces, each block dropping one at a time in a small animation. He nods very slightly, almost imperceptibly, and you understand that something has worked the way it was supposed to work, that the edge case behaves correctly now, that the change he made this morning was the right change. It is a small satisfaction, not a large one. Not the satisfaction of finishing something or discovering something surprising, but the quieter satisfaction of a thing clicking into place, a piece of work that was slightly wrong becoming correct. He plays through to the end of the level. The third solution, the most complicated one, the one that requires 27 moves and leaves the board perfectly empty. The last block clears and the board flashes white for a moment and then shows the level complete state, a simple screen. He closes the test and opens the editor again. You are halfway through the morning. Marcus opens the documentation folder. Inside, printed pages from the design document, stapled in sections. The pages slightly soft from being handled. He leafs through to the section that covers level design, the guidelines the team agreed on early in the project, the rules about how many solutions each level should have, how many moves the longest solution should require, how the difficulty should progress from level to level. He reads these pages slowly. They are not complicated pages. The writing is direct. The sentences short. Each guideline given a line or two. Marcus has read them many times. He reads them again now anyway, because reading them grounds him in the decisions the team made together at the start of the project, when everything was possible and nothing was built, and it reminds him of what they were trying to make. He sets the papers back in the folder. He looks at the screen. He opens the level editor and creates a new file, level 18, which does not yet exist, except in a few lines in the notebook, and a general sense in his mind of what it should feel like. He sets the grid to 12 by 8. He adds the colored block palette on the left. The empty grid sits on the screen, white, waiting. He begins to place blocks. This is slow work. He thinks about each placement, which color, which position, how it relates to the blocks already placed, and how it might relate to the blocks not yet placed. He thinks about the pathways a player's eye might take across the board, where it might get caught, where it might move freely. He thinks about the solutions he wants to exist and the paths those solutions will require. He places a red block in the upper left quadrant. he places two blue blocks in the lower right. He places a yellow block in the center and looks at the three placements together, how they sit on the empty grid, what the space between them suggests. He moves the yellow block one square to the left. He looks again. Outside, a car horn sounds twice. Distant, faint. And then the street goes quiet again. The ventilation makes its soft, constant sound. Diane's headphones, from across the room, produce a very faint sound. Not music exactly, just the presence of sound. The very outer edge of it. A texture more than a detail. Marcus places another blue block. He places a green block. He places three red blocks in a diagonal line and looks at the configuration, which now covers perhaps a quarter of the grid. He reaches for the notebook and sketches the configuration as it stands. The blocks' positions marked with colored initials in small boxes. He writes the word solutions with a question mark, and below it writes three dots, meaning he intends there to be three solutions but has not yet worked them out. He puts the pen down. He picks it up. He writes, move count, approx 20 to 25, and underlines it gently. He puts the pen down again and turns back to the screen. By mid-morning, the level has taken rough shape, perhaps half the blocks placed, the starting configuration beginning to suggest its own logic. Marcus saves the file. The disk makes its soft sound. He rotates slightly in his chair and looks out over the top of the cubicle partition at the office, at the row of cubicles across from him, at the windows along the far wall beyond them, at the pale morning sky beyond the windows. Another colleague has arrived. This is June, the programmer who handles the audio integration, who sits in the cubicle directly across. June is at his desk with his back to Marcus, already working, his own monitor glowing with a different kind of code. Marcus looks at the sky for a moment. Then he turns back to the screen. He opens level 18 again and continues placing blocks. He places a purple block near the right edge. The new purple, the one they debated for a week. He places it and looks at how it sits against the other colors, the soft particular hue of it, and he thinks again that it was probably the right decision to add it, that the palette needed this middle tone between the blue and the red, something that was neither, but gestured toward both. He places two more yellows. He saves again. He drinks from the mug, which has gone cool. The coffee at this temperature is different than the coffee at the temperature it was earlier. Slightly more bitter, slightly less sharp, but still coffee, still familiar. He finishes what is in the mug and sets it down and does not go to refill it yet. He stares at the level layout. Something about the lower left quadrant does not satisfy him. He is not sure why. He looks at the blocks placed there, two reds and a green in a loose cluster, and compares it to the rest of the configuration. It is perhaps too sparse, or the colors don't balance. He moves the green block one square to the right. He looks at it. He moves it back. He replaces the green block with a blue block and looks at that. Better, maybe. He is not sure. He notes it in the notebook. Lower left corner. Green or blue? And draws a small arrow toward the question mark. He leaves it for now. These decisions are easier with time. Something about returning to a layout after a few hours makes the choices clearer, as if the eye needs to forget what it saw before so it can see it freshly again. He minimizes the level editor. He opens the documentation for the physics module, the section describing how blocks interact with the grid edges, the rules for what constitutes a valid move. He reads it slowly, beginning at the top, even though he knows these rules well by now. Reading from the beginning is a habit. It sometimes catches things he has drifted from without noticing. His eyes move down the page. The room is warmer now than it was when he arrived. The sun, still behind the thin cloud layer, has moved to the south side of the building, and the windows that were in shadow in the morning are now in light. And this warmth has moved through the glass into the office in the slow way warmth moves through glass. Not quickly, not noticeably minute by minute, but over the course of hours, undeniably. Noon arrives. Marcus knows it is noon because the clock on the wall, a plain, round clock, black hands on a white face, mounted above the fire door, shows 12. And because his stomach is making a quiet suggestion, he saves his work. He gets his jacket from the back of the chair and his wallet from the desk drawer, and he walks out through the glass door and down the stairs. You go with him. The parking lot in the midday light is ordinary and unremarkable. The yellow lines of the parking spaces, the low stucco buildings on either side, a dumpster with a faded blue lid, a line of young trees planted along the street whose leaves have begun to turn in the early autumn, some of them yellow at the edges, some still almost fully green. Marcus crosses the lot and turns left on the sidewalk. The walk to the deli is 4 minutes. He has walked it many hundreds of times and knows each part of it. The corner with the stop sign, where a crack in the sidewalk has been there since he started working here. The low hedge that sometimes smells of something sweet in the morning and nothing at all by noon. The glass door of the deli with the small bell above it that rings when you enter. He opens the door. The bell rings. The deli is a small room with a glass case along the right wall showing the prepared foods. Salads in clear containers, trays of things cut into pieces. Sandwiches already made and wrapped in paper. And a counter behind which a man is making a sandwich for someone who arrived before Marcus. Marcus waits. He looks at the case, at the sandwiches on the upper shelf, already knowing what he will order, which is the turkey on wheat, which is what he orders most days. The man finishes the previous sandwich and looks up. Marcus orders the turkey on wheat with mustard, no pickles. He waits, while it is made. This is a peaceful kind of waiting, the particular peace of standing in a small room where something is being done for you, where all that is required of you is to stand and be present, and in a few minutes accept what is offered. The sounds of the deli are the sounds of preparation, the soft thud of bread on the cutting board, the pull of the plastic wrap from its roll, the brief sound of the paper bag being shaken open. He pays. He takes the bag. He walks back to the office the same way he came. The low hedge, the crack in the sidewalk, the parking lot, the stairs. He eats the sandwich at his desk. The sandwich is good. The bread is fresh. The turkey thin and even. The mustard, a mild yellow mustard that does not overpower anything. He eats slowly, looking at the screen, which shows the physics documentation, which he is not quite reading, just looking at in the comfortable, unfocused way you look at familiar things while eating. He finishes the sandwich. He folds the paper and puts it in the small wastebasket beside the desk. He opens level 18 again. In the afternoon, work settles into a different rhythm than the morning. The morning is for making decisions. The afternoon is for carrying them out, for the slow, detailed work of building, testing, adjusting, confirming. Marcus places the remaining blocks in level 18, the lower left quadrant resolved, eventually, in favor of a blue block, which feels, right now, in a way it did not this morning. The colors balancing across the full board in a way that satisfies him. He begins to work out the solutions. This is a puzzle-like process itself, sitting with the layout as if he were a player, trying to find the pathways through. He moves blocks in his head first, which is difficult, which is why he sketches in the notebook, small diagrams showing board states at each step, arrows indicating which block moves where, numbers noting how many moves have been used. The first solution takes perhaps 20 minutes to work out, a sequence of 19 moves that clears the board completely. He notes it in the notebook. He works out the second solution. This one is harder to find. He tries several paths that don't work, that dead end, or leave blocks that cannot be cleared. And each time, he resets the diagram and begins again. The fluorescent light above his desk makes its soft electrical sound. The second solution requires 23 moves. He notes it. He stands and stretches, arms above his head, a slow rotation of the neck. The particular satisfaction of releasing the tension that accumulates in the shoulders from hours of sitting. He rolls his shoulders back. He looks at the clock, nearly 3. He sits back down. He begins work on the third solution, which, by the rules they established in the design document, should be the most complex, the most difficult to find for a player who does not know it exists. He thinks about this for a while before he begins sketching what it means for a solution to be difficult to find. What patterns of movement feel counterintuitive? where a player's eye might not naturally go. He begins to sketch. The third solution takes the longest to work out. He fills most of a notebook page with diagrams and arrows and crossed out states before he finds it. 26 moves, each one necessary. No redundancy. The board clearing in a sequence that is surprising even to him, now that he has found it. The way the yellow blocks in the upper center are the last to move, even though they look like they should go early. He sits back and looks at the completed sequence. He is pleased with this. It is the quiet kind of pleasure that does not show much on his face, but which you can feel in the slight settling of his posture, the way he exhales slowly and looks at what he has made. He closes the notebook. He opens the level editor and begins encoding the solutions he has worked out. There is a verification tool built into the editor that can confirm whether a given sequence of moves is valid, and clears the board, which he built early in the project for exactly this purpose. He enters the first solution's moves in order, clicks verify, and the tool runs through them in a few seconds and shows a green confirmation. He enters the second solution. Green. He enters the third. The 26 move sequence, entered carefully from the notebook. Each move double-checked before moving to the next. He reaches the end and clicks verify. The tool runs. Green. He saves the level. The disc makes its sound. Outside the windows, the sky has changed through the afternoon. The thin cloud layer has thickened slightly, and the light has a different quality now. A little more golden, a little more angled. The particular slant of afternoon light in autumn that falls differently than the flat light of noon. The trees in the parking lot below catch this light on one side of their turning leaves, and the other side is in shadow. The yellow-green of them warm against the gray of the pavement. Marcus looks at the windows. He looks at this for a moment, the light and the trees and the ordinary afternoon, without particular feeling, just looking, the way you look at something when you have a moment and there is something to see. He turns back to the screen. He opens the document where he keeps notes on each level, a simple text file, one section per level, tracking decisions made, and reasons for them. Things to remember when testing later. He writes a short entry for level 18. Solutions verified 3. Move counts 19, 23, 26. Lower left adjusted per afternoon review. He writes the date. He saves the file. The afternoon continues. He reviews level 16, which he designed 2 weeks ago, and which has not been tested since. He opens it in the editor and looks at it. A different layout, smaller, 11 blocks, instead of level 18's 16. An older design philosophy from earlier in the project, when they were still figuring out what the levels should feel like. He plays through it once in test mode, slowly, not testing anything specific, just playing. It plays well. He makes a few small notations in the notebook. 16 feels short. Consider one additional constraint block at H4. He closes it. He makes another cup of coffee. The break room in the afternoon is a different place than it is in the morning. Warmer. The coffee in the pot darker still. The light in the window softer. He pours the cup. He stands again for a moment and looks out the window at the ordinary street, at a man walking a dog on the opposite sidewalk. The dog stopping and starting, pausing at every patch of grass. The man, patient, unhurried, waiting each time. He carries the coffee back to his desk. At 4 o'clock, Diane appears at the edge of his cubicle. She has a question about an audio cue for the level clear sequence, the way the sound plays when the last block is cleared, whether it should begin before the visual flash or at the same moment. They talk about it for a few minutes, leaning over the notebook, where Marcus draws a small timeline diagram showing the visual and audio events in sequence. They decide that the sound should begin a fraction of a second before the flash, which will feel, they think, like the sound is causing the flash rather than reacting to it, which is a better feeling. She returns to her desk. He notes the decision in the notebook. The afternoon light through the windows has deepened now, the golden quality of it more pronounced. The shadows outside the windows longer. The office has the particular quality of late afternoon, a slight slowing, a gentle diminishment of energy. The day's work mostly done, and what remains being the quieter final work of consolidation and review. Marcus opens the project's task list, a simple text file maintained by the team. Each item a line with a prefix indicating whose task it is and whether it is done. He reads through his own items. Several are marked complete from this week. Two are in progress. Level design continues. Levels 17 and 18 this week, and edge case testing for simultaneous clears. Level 18 is now designed. The edge case testing he completed this morning. He marks both items complete. He saves the file. He reads through the rest of the list, the items belonging to the others, the current status of the audio integration, the status of the menu screens that are being worked on by the fourth member of the team, who works in a cubicle he cannot see from here. The project is, by his reading, proceeding. Not quickly, not on a schedule that anyone would call efficient, but steadily, level by level, and feature by feature, the pieces accumulating. He closes the task list. He opens a reference book, a thick volume with a gray spine that lives on the corner of his desk, a programming reference. Its spine slightly cracked from the number of times it has been opened. He looks up a specific function related to the animation system, reads the entry, a few paragraphs, some example code in a fixed width font, and then closes the book and returns it to the corner. He drinks the rest of the coffee. It is cold now. He drinks it anyway. At 5 o'clock, the office sounds change slightly. June's keyboard goes quiet. And you hear the particular sounds of someone closing down their work for the day. A few minutes later, Diane's headphones come out. Someone on the other side of the office, invisible, says goodnight to someone. Marcus does a final save of everything open. The level files, the task list, the documentation notes. The disk makes its sound each time, the familiar, soft, mechanical breath. He closes the editor. He closes the documentation. He opens the project directory and looks at the files there. The familiar names listed in alphabetical order. Each one a piece of the work. Level files, code files, asset files, the reference documentation, the design document, the audio files that Diane has been delivering one by one over the past months. He closes the directory. He turns off the monitor. The hum stops. The glow fades from the screen, leaving the reflection of the cubicle in the dark glass for a moment, and then that too goes, and the screen is simply dark. He puts on his jacket. He picks up the notebook. He stands and looks at the desk for a moment, at the empty mug, the documentation folder, the reference book in its corner, the small fan that is not yet put away, everything where it belongs, in its usual place, the desk at the end of the day, looking the way it always looks at the end of the day. He leaves. The stairs, the parking lot, the early evening air, which is cooler now than it was at noon. A pleasant coolness, the particular temperature of an autumn evening that has not yet committed to being cold. The trees in the lot catch the last of the western light, the turning leaves, warm colored in it. A gentle beauty that Marcus notices in a general way without stopping to examine it. He gets into the car. The car starts without hesitation. The engine is a small engine, the sound of it familiar, the vibration through the seat familiar, the way the steering wheel sits in his hands familiar. He backs out of the space slowly and turns toward the exit of the lot. The drive home is 20 minutes. He drives down Mathilda, then east on Evelyn, then a left and a right that he takes without thinking, the route encoded in his hands and the particular lean of the car through each turn. The streets are in the ordinary late afternoon state of a weekday. Some traffic, not heavy, the kind of traffic that moves at its own pace and does not hurry and cannot be hurried. He joins the flow of it. The radio comes on when he starts the car, and he turns it down to a low volume, something on the public radio station. A conversation that he does not quite follow. Just voices. Just the presence of sound in the quiet of the car. The heater comes on after a few minutes and warms the air around his feet, which have been cool. And this small warmth is comfortable. He drives. The neighborhood he lives in is a quiet neighborhood. Older houses, small yards, wide streets, with trees planted at the property lines. The trees mature enough that their branches meet above the road in summer. Though now in autumn, the leaves are thinning. He parks in the driveway of the small house he rents, a two-bedroom house with beige siding and a concrete path from the driveway to the front door. He turns off the car. He sits for a moment in the quiet of the driveway. The engine ticks softly as it cools, a gentle, irregular sound, each tick, a small contraction in the metal that means the day is done and the heat of effort is passing out of things and the evening is arriving in its steady way. He watches a neighbor's cat cross the lawn next door, moving unhurried across the grass, finding something to investigate at the base of a rose bush, and then moving on. He gets out of the car. The front door opens, and the house is quiet and warm, the particular warmth of a house that has been closed all day with the heat on low, a softness to the air inside, a smell of the house itself, which is the smell of familiar shelter. He hangs his jacket on the hook inside the door. He sets the notebook on the small table in the entryway, where it will sit until tomorrow morning when he carries it back to the car and back to the office. He goes to the kitchen. The kitchen is a small kitchen. White cupboards, linoleum on the floor, a window above the sink that looks out onto the backyard, where the grass is going yellow at the edges, autumn touching it at the margins. He fills a glass with water and drinks half of it, standing at the sink, looking out at the yard. The yard in the evening is peaceful. A bird lands on the fence post at the far end and sits there for a moment. A small brown bird, sitting with the particular ease of a creature that has no concern beyond the fence post it is sitting on. And then it flies away, gone in an instant, the fence post empty again. He sets the glass down. He goes to the living room. The living room is not large. There is a couch that faces the television, which is not on. There are shelves along one wall, with books arranged without particular system, organized by the way books accumulate rather than any plan. The spines a variety of colors and widths. There is a coffee table with a few magazines on it and a lamp in the corner that he turns on now, its warm light filling the room gently. He sits on the couch. He does not turn on the television. He sits in the quiet room in the lamp's warm light and lets the day slow down around him, lets the morning's code and the afternoon's puzzle, and the drive home, and the glass of water, all settle into the simply past, the unremarkable, completed record of this particular Tuesday in October 1995, which was like most other Tuesdays, and was also its own day, its own specific arrangement of ordinary moments, now done. You sit with him. The house is quiet. The lamp is warm. Outside, the neighborhood is settling into evening. The light going out of the sky above the trees. The streetlights beginning to come on one by one down the street. Marcus reaches for one of the magazines on the table and opens it at random and looks at a page that shows a photograph of something, and you cannot quite see what it is from here, and it does not matter what it is. He looks at it with the same neutral, resting expression, eyes moving slowly over the image, taking it in without urgency. You are not required to take anything in. You can simply sit, simply rest. The magazine rustles as a page is turned, a soft sound, paper against paper, the lightest of sounds in a quiet room. The lamp hums very faintly, its own small electrical presence. Somewhere in the house, the heat comes on through the vents, a low breath of warm air that enters the room at floor level and rises slowly, gently, carrying with it the faint smell of warm dust that is the smell of warmth arriving. The day is done. All the compiles complete, all the levels saved, all the solutions verified, the move counts noted, the decisions made and recorded, the sandwich eaten, the coffee drunk, the drive completed, the notebook set down on the table by the door. Everything in its place. You are in your place. The evening is soft and unhurried and asks nothing of you. Let it ask nothing. The lamp's warm circle of light holds the room in its gentle radius, and beyond the radius, the room grows dimmer and softer. The shelves with their books, the television dark, the window where the last light is now gone, and the glass holds only the reflection of the room itself, the lamp, the couch, and the slow quiet of the things that are simply here. You are simply here. The sound of the neighborhood is very faint now, an occasional car passing slowly on the street outside. The particular sound of it arriving and passing and fading, a complete small event that requires nothing from you. A dog somewhere, briefly, and then quiet. The wind in the trees, perhaps the thin sound of dry autumn leaves moved by a gentle air, and then the wind passes and the leaves are still. You are still. Your breathing is slow. Each breath arrives easily and departs easily, the natural rhythm of a body at rest, not asking you to regulate it, not asking anything. Your shoulders are soft. Your hands are easy wherever they are. The warmth of the room holds you from all sides, not too warm, simply warm, the right temperature for rest, the temperature of a place that is taken care of. The magazine on the table, the lamp on the shelf, the sound of the heat in the vents, barely there now, a murmur, the notebook by the door, waiting for tomorrow, the office waiting for tomorrow. The grid of level 18 waiting, its blocks in their positions, the three solutions confirmed, the purple block in its place, the blue block in the lower left that was the right choice after all of it is waiting quietly. There is nothing to decide. There is nowhere to go. The day has brought you here to this quiet place, to this warmth and stillness. And here is where you are, and here is where you will stay, for now, for as long as you need. Let the room hold you. Let the evening continue its quiet arrival. Let the ordinary completion of an ordinary day settle through you fully. The way warmth settles through a room, slowly and thoroughly, until even the corners are warm. Everything is complete. Everything is still. You rest.